I'm Ted Baker, and this is the Hobart Lacrosse Podcast, Episode 89, regular season here. Hobart, Canisius, Poole Family Dome, Saturday at 12 noon, joined by the coach of the Statesman, Greg Raymond. Welcome back.
Thanks, brother.
So your first impressions on the scrimmage, you had a slow start and a pretty darn good finish.
Yeah, you hit it, brother. I think it was a awesome week for Hobart Lacrosse. Sad in some ways, but also very powerful as we took the team down to Coach Urich's funeral service on Friday morning. So we went down there Thursday, weren't able to practice on Thursday, and then Friday weren't able to practice as well. The weather wasn't really permitting down there. And then we came back. We actually got back pretty late, about 8:30, 9 o'clock. And, spent about 16 hours on the bus Thursday and Friday down and back. So we put our guys through a lot. And, I think just kind of seeing the Hobart faithful in the building on Friday morning and hearing the words of Scott Urich, Coach Urich's son, and just, kind of being surrounded by all things, lacrosse excellence, to be candid with you, Ted. It was just a really, really powerful experience for our men. And I think, foregoing those two practices, if we're talking about the scrimmage, foregoing those two practices and that those two long bus rides, I really think we felt it in the first quarter. We saw a lot of bus legs and we saw a lot of guys shaking some things out that, we're making some kind of uncharacteristic slow plays and this and that. So I thought it took us a little bit to just, kind of shake off that that trip and get into a groove. But as you said, we started buzzing in that third quarter, and it was nice. I think you saw a lot of what we're capable of, and when we do start rolling, how many people are capable of doing a pretty good job on the field. I think that's one thing that we're going to continue to push here is making sure our depth is improving. And as we look at our bench, kind of the next one up. So, a very telling scrimmage and scrimmages in a lot of ways. They kind of went exactly as we needed them to. So we feel great about that and are in a pretty good place going into that first game this Saturday.
I know you emphasize the culture and you connect the present with the past, but these guys were not even born when Dave Urich was around. How much do you have to tell them about who he is, and how much do they seek out on their own when they come in and kind of know it anyway?
Well, yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. You have, we have Hobart legacies on this team, and, we'll talk, Alex Rosa in particular is, his father played for Coach U and is in the Hall of Fame here. So I think, Hobart does mean something a little bit different to a guy like him and in his friend group. I know he's done a phenomenal job explaining what the legacy of Coach Urich means and how it impacts him every day. And then there's some that, came here from our recruiting efforts and chose this place because it's a great education and we play a great schedule. And yes, the tradition is always a ringing factor in, I hope, all the decisions to come play at Hobart. But, you do have to spend some time teaching and talking about how this tradition's created and, what type of people made this what it is. So, I think when you get into those elements, and I was talking to Coach Hanna, I bumped into him and he was down there, of course, last Friday. And, he expressed some awesome sentiments about, how present our guys were at that service and how wide open their ears were, just the posture in which they were sitting that you could tell they wanted to be there and they didn't just go because Coach Raymond made them. So, but even for me, Ted, I mean, when you're at an event like that, it's just real. You see how many people were impacted by the type of leader Coach Urich was. And, I still believe that a lot of his influence over his players and his men when he coached, and, that in turn influences me. And so that connection to the players that we have presently, it just, in my opinion, the reason why I love this place so much is, like you said, the past and the present are intertwined a bit. So We teach it a lot, and it's not just Coach Yurick. He's a large part of it, but it's so many people and people before him, people after, people during. So an event like that really does solidify all the things that we preach on a daily basis and a weekly basis to our men, and how fortunate we are to wear this jersey. So long-winded way of saying both, but I'm very proud of our guys and very proud to be the head coach of a program full of men who appreciate an event like that.
I wasn't around when any of this happened, but I remember a few years ago, I've been learning it from you and on my own, but a few years ago when we played at U.S. Lacrosse headquarters outside of Baltimore, I walked in that building, and every time you go around a corner, there's some representation of Hobart.
No, yeah. I mean, even to the land, Ted, the land
Yeah.
that we play on, it's sacred ground. And the introduction of Boswell Field, William Dobbins Award, all of these things. I mean, we are a staple in the growth, the roots of this great game. So, I mean, we made a very consistent point of that as we walk through that Hall of Fame. Is just, not just look at all the greats, look at all that is representing Hobart and Hobart lacrosse in this Hall of Fame room. So yeah, you're right, man. It's a really cool thing.
So the bus legs explains some of the beginning of the scrimmage, but what I was offensively early in the game, it reminded me of last year's offense, which very too often was guy dodges unsuccessfully, flips it to another guy, he dodges unsuccessfully, and uh-oh, there's no time left on the clock. But by later in the game, now you're moving the ball and guys are catching the ball and just dropping it in at the goalie's feet. So what picked up and changed in terms of just moving the ball, moving the defense, and getting those easy shots that a good offense gets?
When you're in a little bit of a funk, and we have to do a better job as coaches and a program at understanding that, games, as I've said many times to you, Ted, they don't always go the way you plan. And it's kind of that age-old Mike Tyson quote, everybody's got a plan till they get punched in the mouth. So we don't play, as I said last week, we don't play any teams with bad players. We don't play any teams that are poorly coached, so we may be in a situation where, we're not playing at the level or at the directive that our coaches have provided or asked us to. So, what we got to do in timeouts and in between quarters is kind of revisit some standard, revisit some fundamentals, help our guys remember, what great offense is, what Coach Brundage teaches on a daily basis, which is ball movement, off ball movement, and great balance and great spacing. So, when you get into those moments of adrenaline, like I talked about against Vermont, the biggest distraction in system, the biggest distraction in work ethic, sacrifice, and all things preparation is a different color jersey. That's as simple as I can put it. You lose sight of what you've been practicing, because sometimes guys want to make plays and sometimes guys want to do things that ignite a sideline, or it's all in good intent, there's no doubt. But you have to remind players often that, hey, this is not what we do. And I think early in that scrimmage, we spent a lot of time just saying, the ball's not moving great, we're not subbing great, we're not taking advantage of an early rush, we're kind of winging it a bit. So let's get back to basics. Let's make sure that, all the things we want to do from a full field and half field standpoint offensively are executed. And for the most part, I think our guys rebounded and responded well.
Yeah, I thought the turnaround, it wasn't really flashy or sudden. It was just, I looked up at one point, hey, we've scored 9 goals in a row. Hey, they haven't scored in 27 and a half minutes. I mean, it just was buckling on the chin straps and getting back to work.
Yeah, and Ted, we don't want our guys to feel like they need to make plays. That's where a player gets tight. That's where a system falls apart. We want them to be all involved in the process. And like I keep saying on this podcast, forego the outcome, be a part of the present, and trust the preparation. We want the system to provide our guys great opportunities. We want the system to provide our defense great support systems, and not put them in a position where they feel like they have to go here, or the other team may score a goal. We want them to think that, hey, if I do my job, we can get a great stop and clear the ball the other way. We want it to be as simple as that. Yeah, I know it gets more complicated and the pace of the game changes a lot of things, but if we can be process driven and stay involved in the system, we hope that it'll alleviate a lot of the dramatic hard work our guys have to do and just put them in positions where their hands are free and they can let it go.
I know nobody's keeping stats. That's my job. I'm the big stat geek, so I was keeping stats. Save percentage for the three goalies, 7.04. And I watched, I mean, you started Jack Viola. He was seeing the ball well. He was moving well. Ellis Wilson came in second. First testing shot on him. He drops down and stops a low shot. I mean, those guys were on fire. They were seeing the ball, moving well, and they look great.
Yeah, great short memories on all those guys. And you put Trevor in. I think we put him in with 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and he made the first three saves that were thrown at him. So, kind of adding on to last week, we're really happy with that position. In that game, Brady Smith is out with nicked up here and there. We don't even get to see him. So, the depth at that spot is something that we're very intrigued by, and we'll continue to depend on it as the season goes on here. But you're right, Jack's done a really good job. Especially after some up and down a year ago with him in and out. We put Jack in some really difficult positions a year ago, Ted, if you remember. We're in situations like Cornell where I think we went into that game with a brand new roster, a bunch of guys banged up and hurt the game before and out that were playing the game before. And it's a 2 day swing. And we threw him in at halftime and just, help solidify some of his toughness, and did the same thing against Richmond. So, he's in a place where he's got some pretty thick skin. And then you look at Ellis and who he is for our guys in this program. I mean, he is, a terrific student. He's a terrific person. He's a terrific leader. And we haven't talked to him much about, or any of them, about what we're doing and who we're putting in. We want them all to be ready. So, but I have to comment on how grown up and proud we are of, Ellis's basically connection to this whole thing. So we're going into the first game. We're going to put Jack in between the pipes to start, and we're going to back him up all the way. And I know Ellis will be, the biggest supporter of all that.
And of course, the long sticks in front have to do the job too. I thought the guys, there were a couple times they pretty much de-pantsed a couple of guys, and then they threw the lumber around and only picked up the three penalties all day.
Yeah, I think we've got a group that we, from a physical standpoint, sometimes we have to dial back, which is great. This is a slew of Michael Christensens, a slew of Dan Ryans, a slew of, Nolan Firth being at the helm of this thing, and having Jackson Galliani back, who's, Jackson's as energetic and as physical and as competitive as anybody. And so, just putting all those guys into the mix, and then, you get a new or kind of fresh resurgence from Brady Comella, who's been, as consistent as anybody out here. I mean, we love the physicality that we're playing with. And I think the brain that you put with Michael Schaefer in there, how Nick Soddy's playing as a sophomore, and how physical Pup plays, Julian Race, and then Schlich, we've got some good athleticism, some great competitiveness, and a lot of physical guys. So we like where we're going with this thing. Still need a lot of work, and got to fine-tune some stuff. But, having 91 out there, putting him in all different spots, I think it just kind of sets the tone for who we want to be on the defensive end.
I thought the clearing game also started very slowly, and it looked like it got better when you started doing it with the wheels. It looks like you've got some of those middies who can take the ball out of the defensive end, get it in the offensive end, and make the right decision with it.
Yeah, Ted, I'm not a statistics guy either. That's one that I focus on and look at every scrimmage, every game, is what's the percentage of which we're clearing? And then in particular, when do we clear the ball best? I know it sounds obvious and you just stated it, but when we're moving forward and, we're essentially breaking a ride with an early surge from defense to offense, that's when we tend to clear the ball most effectively. And so, we've been working a lot this week on that kind of that first quarter, that early second quarter. We're kind of Hobart of old, where our close defensemen are a little stagnant. Our middies aren't moving great to get the ball in their sticks, and then it's a fight. But once we get into that realm of actual off ball and ball movement, the clear can work really well. So we're pushing forward with that. We've been working on it all week, and we're anxious to be better with it on Saturday.
Looked like one of your main D middies we're going to see this year is the senior JT Anderson. We haven't talked a whole lot about him. Tell us a little bit about him.
JT's a stud, Ted. I mean, he is, first and foremost, I mean, he's in kind of the Max Horton, the Will Corbett, the realm of athletes here that are far more intelligent than their coaching staff and a lot of people around him. So, I mean, JT is a extremely bright young man. He is so emotionally as well. I remember a conversation we had last year where he started to come on towards the end of the year as a very impactful player and gave us very promising hope for who he'd be as a senior. And he just broke down the routine of his day, how he's changed it, where he stretches, the places where he hydrates, the food that gets him most ready to play. I mean, he is dialed in, man, to everything he needs from his mind to his body and his soul. He's got it all lined up. And he's also, thankfully, he's big, he's very strong, and he doesn't make a lot of same mistakes twice. He studies what he needs to. So we feel like we're getting great depth there. And he's doing a great job. We have two freshmen and James Hamilton and Sheldon Broughton who are coming along here. So, we feel very established with Julian Race and Schleich and a couple of our two-way middies, but also want JT, Sheldon and James to keep this trajectory going forward. We feel like the depth at that position is, one of the things that'll solidify you in the long run.
You talked last week about the face-off group as a group, and you had four guys out there. But Seamus Schofield, coming back off a year-ending injury, missed all of last year, not only won 5 out of 6, scored the prettiest face-off guy goal I think I've ever seen. Usually it's win the face-off, charge, and score. He was hung out there for an extended possession and actually made an attack move from behind the net, curled out, dodged, and scored. That's pretty.
Yeah, that's it. That's Coach Brundage's big offensive brain at work, really. I think we see things in Seamus that are very versatile. If you were to watch him in a stick work drill or an offensive drill, he's got a pretty good mind for it. And if you go back all the way to who he was in high school, whatever competition he's playing, yeah, I think he was 99% at the face-off X in his senior year in high school, but he also had over 120 points. So he's been in those places before. I think he's very comfortable in those places. And the good thing about Moose is he's still fighting through some stuff to come back. It's a tougher thing than a lot of people recognize, being out for a year. Even if your injury is healed, it takes a while to get back into that groove, man. It's just, you're a little bit hesitant to, no one wants to get hurt again after they've already been. And so, getting in the right mindset is something that does take some time. And he's been working very hard to get there. So the good thing about him, like I started with, is you can put him out there cold and he's pretty dialed into what happens next, And so if we rewind to the Providence game, the one that you just referenced that in Sparke, Maryland, I mean, Moose was awesome in that game. And he went in when Shea needed a break here and there, and just, I mean, he went forward, he went back, he went all over the place and created some offense for us. So we're developing a pretty good dynamic at that position. More depth than we've had in a while. It's actually becoming challenging as a coaching staff to determine who's best in what scenarios. So that's what the early season's for. And with four guys, with God willing they stay healthy, we think we could have a pretty good four-headed monster heading into conference play.
And it's even more important this year. I don't know how they're going to call the faceoffs. We never really kind of know from year to year, but new rule this year, if a faceoff man commits a violation, he has to sit the next one out. So you got to always have a number two ready.
Right. And number two is that, don't need a ton of whistle prep or this or that. And I think one thing that the refs are doing an adjustment is after that set call, they do have a strong and long pause this year as directed, so that there isn't a great advantage to being out there more often and being in a groove. And so changing up the whistle cadence is still something that they'll do, but they also, they're going to leave the faceoff guys down there set for a little bit longer, so that it's about face-off expertise and being good at the position rather than timing the whistle, so to speak. And there'll be a little bit of that. There always is, but hopeful that these changes make the face-off officiating more consistent and allow more guys to go in there and be impactful without, two or three or four under their belt.
You open the regular season with Canisius. You've beaten them 13 straight, but those scores are getting tighter and tighter every year. The days of 22-5 are over. So tell us about the Griffins.
A group we respect a ton, Ted, and I love Mark. I think Mark's an awesome guy and a great coach, and his assistant is a guy that's gotten very close to our staff. We've run camps together. We see each other on the road a lot. We so on and so forth. I think we appreciate the upstate plight that a team from Buffalo is going through, because it's not much different for a team from Geneva. And so I think we have a lot of a dual respect there. Last year, I believe, was one of the better Canisius teams that we've seen. We've watched a bunch of their games as of late last season, and again, continue to see the improvement and basically the team development that make these games much, much more up and down and much more balanced. And like you said, there's never been, hey, let's go beat this team 20 to. Hey, if you go back to my first game, Ted, that's my first win against Canisius, and we beat them in double overtime with a goal from, Cam Stone to get my first win. So I'll never forget that, and also, kind of bring that mentality into every time I'm preparing for Canisius. They if there's anything they've garnered over all these years, it's our respect. So we'll be very prepared to play them as hard as we know how.
I know you're focused in on your team, but let's take a quick look at the Atlantic 10. You were picked in a tie for fourth, and I'm going to throw this out here. You got one first place vote. Was that you? Can you vote for your own team, or do you want to say, or?
Hell yeah, that was me.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the first time I've ever done it, if I can be honest with you. So, I think preseason polls are, essentially the provide the same value as toilet paper. But, with that being said, I love this team. I love who we are. And there's also a tremendous amount of turnover from one year to the next in this conference. And I think this is one of the first years that everybody's been on an even playing field in terms of we're not really sure who's going to be on the field for anyone. That's top to bottom, High Point to St. Bonaventure. Each team we play on our schedule, we know they're all very well coached, and our guys know they're very well coached. And no matter who's out on that field for each program, they're going to be kind of classic, heavyweight battles. And that makes us proud to be a part of this conference. But, we're very focused on what we haven't done yet to be a valued and respected member of this conference. So, we're pretty set on righting some wrongs and making sure that going forward, the changes in this A10 and changes in personnel, whatever they may mean, that can impact the way we prepare and the type of product we want to put on that field for those games.
All right, 12 noon, Poole Family Dome. We're happy to have the dome. We're there maybe for the first four games, depending on how the weather goes. 12 noon start on WEOS. This podcast can be found wherever you get your podcasts, be it Apple or Spotify or Google Podcasts. And, of course, get all your athletics information at hwsathletics.com. Coach, thanks. Look forward to some wins and some fun talks this year.
All right, beauty, Ted. Thanks, brother.